My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
Whole part of the show, man.
Hello, everybody. And for the final time this year, it is Pollock and Thurston. Coming at you on New Year's Eve, we are not taking the day off. In fact, everybody, I know a lot of people, the year end, they're all looking at various lists. Pro Wrestling Tees just put out their top 10 merch movers of the year. And I think it's only fitting that we announced that we are releasing the Pollock and Thurston shirt, I think, in 2026. This is the official uniform of Pollock and Thurston that we are introducing here. This is we have had some excellent design options, and I think we're going with this.
This shirt right here, we're matching. This is not coordinated.
It's no.
a plain medium light blue shirt with buttons. Yeah,
this is what I imagine all our listeners put on Wednesdays to get in the proper function.
Yes. Everyone's wearing the same right now.
Well, everybody, big week ahead for Brandon Thurston. Not only are we going to get to his story from this past Monday, but of course, the relaunch of 3-Hour SmackDowns in what other city than Buffalo on Friday night. That's a very, very exciting week for one Brandon Thurston.
The expansion of margin accretion, the expansion of content production, more customization, more optimization, all starts right here in Buffalo, New York.
That's it. So we are going to also take a look at some of the big stories of 2025, no shortage of them. And then if we have time, maybe we'll do some look ahead to 2026, what it's going to be on the horizon. But we fast forward to Monday, and Brandon, you put out a very significant story reporting on the TKO merger that was completed in 2023 and new documents that have been unsealed that you were able to get your eyes on. And first of all, I want to just talk about like the process of that you had to go through just in reporting this story out and how far this went back, what you are able to share about like the reporting process on a story like this that has, you know, a legal component to it, obviously, with the backdrop being the ongoing shareholder lawsuit.
Yeah, so this is in Delaware Chancery Court. And each court has its own rules. Delaware Chancery Court has a rule called 5.1. And I think we talked about this shortly after it happened. I filed a notice of challenge, it's called. Anybody can do this under the rules. You don't have to be a party to the lawsuit. Any person, I believe, are the exact words of Rule 5.1, 5.1G of the rules of the Delaware Court of Chancery. A lot of the filings, especially since discovery has been underway, but even before that, even in the complaint itself, which is people who've ever looked at lawsuits may know, the complaint is one of the first filings that you see in a civil lawsuit is these are the allegations of the plaintiff. And even that contained redactions. And I understand that there's a process that the parties go through to put redactions on the various filings. And like I said, especially since discovery has happened, since there have been a lot of documents turned over, there have been depositions, a lot of information is being redacted or just filed sealed. All exhibits, in fact, are filed sealed. They're not required to be made public unless someone comes and files a notice of challenge and asks for those records to be disclosed. The legal standard is if you want something to be withheld, the burden is on the filer of that information, and they must show that there is a particularized harm that outweighs the public interest. So we're seeing a few of those motions come in today and yesterday.
And when it comes to like what is redacted, what is kind of that process, and how is that determined in terms of what is going to be unsealed versus what will be what information is considered it's private and won't be disclosed?
You'd have to look at the rules. They've filed motions, so we know that KKR has filed a motion. We can't say what it is. It is a motion that appears on the docket, but the motion itself is sealed. The DNO defendants, who are the members of the board of directors, have also filed a motion primarily pertaining to personal telephone numbers that they want to retain as redacted. So we will look those over carefully and review them.
So I think most people know the general merits of the lawsuit, that the plaintiffs are accusing Vince McMahon and by extension those at TKO that this was not an above board process, that this was largely a transaction that was designed to protect Vince McMahon in the sense that he would have a protected position in this merged company between WWE and UFC, and that other bidders were this was largely just a charade of a transaction or a bidding process would be the better description of it, that this was preordained, that Endeavor was going to be able to win out in this bidding process, and being that it is a public company, their first their obligation is to maximize shareholder value, which is something they are still going to have to prove. And these documents, they certainly give us like an insight into what was a key period in 2022 after June, when the first Wall Street Journal reports are published, Vince McMahon then resigning for the first time in July of 2022, and then the process that followed, where Vince McMahon is still the controlling shareholder in the company, but he has stepped down as executive chairman and, you know, very much in the mix here as a prelude to his return to the board right at the start of 2023.
Yes. And to be clear, we have a lot of the plaintiff's account. We don't have as much of the defense asserting their case on the merits. We have a lot of litigation so far over discovery, but Vince McMahon has denied this. We don't have what's called an answer. We do have an answer from Vince, but we don't have an answer that is public, filed over a year ago though, from the DNO defendants. That is the members of the board. By the way, the defendants, we should probably name who they are Nick Khan, Paul Levesque, George Barrios, Michelle Wilson. All four of those individuals were members of the board of directors. Upon Vince's return, George and Michelle came along with Vince's return to the board. Vince, I think would assert, and I believe he has asserted in some of these filings, that you look, he got WWE a premium on the value. And if you look at WWE's 14C that they did file just after a couple months after this transaction was announced, they do have some other bids with anonymized names next to them to compare to. And they say once you include the synergies that you're able to apply to this Endeavor deal, it was really giving shareholders a deal of $100 per share, which is just a little bit higher than the other bids they identify, which are between, I believe, 95 and 100, give or take. So they are asserting that they got the best possible deal for shareholders. However, the shareholder plaintiffs, I believe, would assert that they did not, the WWE did not give this process enough time to develop. and Vince was actually intent on preserving his own future in WWE. These other parties, they say, would not have allowed Vince to stay with the company. They would have insisted on Vince, due to scandal, being, you know, leaving the company once the transaction was completed, and only because of his relationship with Ari Emanuel. They did have a business relationship. Maybe they had a personal relationship. Ari was willing to keep him.
Could I make a wild defense, if I am Vince McMahon, that I was operating in the best interests of the most important shareholder of all, that my self-interest is representative of all of the shareholders because I am the most powerful shareholder?
Yes, but you have a fiduciary duty, especially when you're on a board. And even as a controlling shareholder, there's ample case law to assert that even in that period where he was retired, now I don't know if the plaintiffs are even alleging this, but even in that period, this is just a legal issue. Even in that period where he was retired, he's no longer a chief executive. He's no longer a member of the board. He's still the controlling shareholder, though. And even a controlling shareholder has certain fiduciary duties, that is, duties to ensure that the rest of the shareholders have their interests protected.
And, I mean, you've made this very clear as well. Like, just the idea that just because Vince McMahon had resigned in July of 2022, and there is the appearance of Vince McMahon still conducting business. Like, there is nothing illegal about that. There is nothing, like, we can argue about whether or not he was, like, orchestrating this sale and how that pertained to the process that they were rolling out in 2023. But the actual act of meeting with Ari Emanuel or having contact with on various levels of business for WWE, again, he is still the controlling shareholder, and like, he is not in violation.
Let's imagine a world in which Vince does not return to the board and WWE still sells the company to somebody, whether it's Endeavor, whomever. Vince McMahon, as the controlling shareholder, would still have had to approve of any such transaction, because the shareholders have to approve, and he is the controlling shareholder. So you'd have to approve. And in fact, that's essentially what he's leveraging in some of those letters that we see in December of 2022, where he's going back and forth with the board about how he wants to return and how he should return. And the board is saying, no, we agree that you should not return. He's saying that he will not approve of any such transaction if he's not allowed to come back in. And he, in fact, doesn't need anybody's permission to come back in because he has control. This evidence, though, is being raised to support the plaintiff's case that whether or not it was illegal for – and it wasn't illegal for Vince McMahon to discuss with Ari Emanuel, for example, whether he might want to buy or merge with WWE, it is nonetheless evidence that's being raised by the plaintiffs to show that this was – to allege that this was a predetermined process and that the other offers weren't allowed to develop to the extent that shareholders got the best possible deal.
Yeah, we will get back to the timeline because I think it is important to kind of go in order here, but these are just some questions that have come up for me. When we were first discussing the shareholder lawsuit, part of my thought was, well, look at the end result here. Like, this has been, I think you would look at, this was a terrific partner for WWE. We have seen the result of the TKO stock price. Like, this is a company in Endeavor that
210 today. It has doubled since this deal closed.
Like, this has been a gigantic success in terms of this merger in the first 2 years of the two entities being together. This is also a very specialized company in Endeavor that has a very there is a lot of synergy to be had between the UFC and WWE and operating two very unique businesses together. However, is the outcome of this separate from the process itself? Like, if I am the plaintiffs, do I still have a case regardless of how this merger has materialized, that if there was a flawed process here, we still have a strong case? And I know that's kind of leaning on your opinion here, but is one separate from the other?
We can show this graphic that you don't even know that I've made, but I've made it.
Ooh.
This is showing what, according to WWE's own filing that they published in 2023. These are what the other offers were. And we have a range, and I've rounded them to the nearest dollar. This is per share. Remember Vince at the time reportedly, I believe Lucas Shaw of Bloomberg was breaking this at the time, that this was Vince's asking price of $9 billion. If you divide that by the number of basic shares, that comes out to just under $120 per share, assuming I'm doing the math right there. So he was asking for more than what they ended up getting, but then that makes sense. You're selling something, you want to, maybe you're asking for more than what it's going to end up selling for. But the other offers with that are attributed to these anonymized names, we have somebody offering $77 per share. We have somebody offering $90 to $98 per share. We have somebody offering $95 to $100 per share. And then you have Endeavor offering $96 to $100 per share. Again, that's taking into account whether or not you're counting the synergies, that is the cost savings, particularly the cost savings, but probably some revenue synergies as well. So, and then you have in one filing I have found in this case, you have the plaintiffs pointing to what they say is, you know, it's just listed in a table. It's related to some requests for records or for looking at the books that one of these plaintiffs made and apparently did get some meeting minutes of board meetings and things like that, and points out this $178 per share high case that you know, apparently WWE, they internally assessed their highest possible value at $178. So considerably more than the roughly $100 that they actually made the deal for. But yet, on the other hand, you do have, you know, what you pointed out is that, you know, now what is this combined company? It's not quite apples to apples, but this combined company is now worth well over $200 per share. Now, I don't know how that's going to all hash out in terms of, you know, this lawsuit going forward, in terms of how the plaintiff's going to argue that they really would have gotten a better deal. I think there's some funny timing issues here that I'm not equipped to explain in terms of, well, if you just held on to your stock, it would have doubled by now. The defendants might point out, but that's something that may get litigated here in the future.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
So, obviously, with a number of emails and correspondence that was uncovered in these unsealed documents that you had, one that I think has drawn maybe the most attention was July 22nd, 2022, that being a relevant date because this is mere hours after Vince McMahon announced on Twitter his retirement from WWE at the time. And Mark Shapiro sending a message to Jason Lublin and Andrew Schleimer of Endeavor. And it reads that Nick and Stephanie, we assume Nick Khan and Stephanie McMahon, are going to take over the WWE for the next 9 months. At the end of the 9 months, Vince will be back with a new board, or he will take the company private, or he will sell it / coming to us. The race is on. The courtship is on. And I just imagine Mark Shapiro standing with a rose in a garden awaiting Vince McMahon, the final executive. And I mean, this, other than being like 3 months off his estimate, this is pretty much exactly as it goes. And as a attachment to that, this is July. In October, Mark Shapiro goes on the town with Matt Bellany and is asked about the potential of a acquisition of WWE.
There is a significant league out there right now, the WWE, that many believe might be sold in the next few years. Are you guys looking at that, and how closely, and what would it take for you to bring that in?
Look, very similar model if you think about it, not just to the UFC, but in terms of historical context, right? Ari Emanuel, Endeavor, WME represented Vince McMahon and WME, has been representing them for the last, you know, decade plus, very similar to what we were doing with the Fertittas in the UFC. So we know the WWE very, very well. We know the businesses. Hell, we know Stephanie. We know Nick Khan. But we've shown the streets, and frankly, everybody else in the industry that cares, what we can do when you put the UFC on top of the Endeavor platform. There's just all kinds of levers we can flip. And when it comes to the WWE, yes, that would be something that would be interesting, that would be worth exploring. Would we buy it? Who knows? Last time I checked, it's not for sale. But is it something we'd be interested in? We're interested in anything in the owned sports properties segment.
So there you have the contrast, public versus private, Mark Shapiro, when it comes to the potential acquisition of WWE, that being in the summer and then into the fall of 2022.
Yeah, it's I remember, you know, considering this at the time. And it, to be clear, too, it wasn't a novel idea. It wasn't like people in the public weren't talking about WWE selling. I mean, there was always chatter and consideration of WWE selling before, you know, the scandal around Vince broke. The notion that I kind of, you know, was very open to is that Vince is never going to part ways with control. And there's a comment way back in an earnings call where he says something to that effect, saying that he, you know, he doesn't necessarily want to give up control. But, you know, once the scandal broke and there was clearly pressure to push him out of the company, I think maybe that became more of a lever he was willing to pull. But there were always considerations, especially when WWE's media rights were becoming so valuable. If you're a media rights buyer and you're, you know, Netflix or Disney or NBC Universal / Comcast, you're a much larger company than WWE. If you're NBC in particular, you're buying raw rights for hundreds of millions of dollars a year. It might just make sense, more sense, to buy the company. So this was, you know, something that was very much in the air publicly. It's not as if this was not being discussed publicly and only privately. That being said, I listened to that at the time and thought, well, maybe they are interested in maybe Endeavor would buy or merge with or whatever WWE. So that sounded like something that might happen. And then we had Ari Emanuel talk. Do you want to get to that? Ari Emanuel, after Vince actually did come back in very early 2023, WWE immediately announced that they were open for strategic alternatives. And then we have Ari Emanuel's comments on an earnings call being asked directly about it, because now this is an open process.
As it relates to the WWE, it's an unbelievable product. Vince is an unbelievable, you know, created a great business. We've had a longstanding relationship with them over two decades. We're doing, as I indicated, On Location business with them, Endeavor streaming business with them. So, you know, his business is really valuable. But we're not going to do anything as it relates to kind of changing our leverage position right now.
Last week on your earnings call, you were asked about the WWE opportunity. For those who may not be aware, WWE is in the midst of a strategic review, which may end up with the company being sold. You gave an appropriate non-answer as a good public CEO. But I do think investors are wondering about your willingness to use your equity as currency, given where the stock is today. And I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that.
Well, here's what I would say to you is, I don't talk about M&A. I appreciate you asking the question. Here's what I will do to clarify that answer that we gave last week. We have taken the company from 8x levered to below 4, which is what we'd say. I'm now sleeping because of that from 4 hours to 8 hours, which is good. I'd sleep a lot more if I got it lower. For any transaction right now, we're not going to kind of use any public, I mean, our equity for a transaction. As it relates to the WWE, I think it's an incredible asset.
I'm glad to hear that debt is not keeping Ari Emanuel up at night.
He's talking about being levered a lot there. What does that mean? They're three times levered. They're five times levered, whatever it might be. They incurred a lot of debt when they purchased UFC in 2016, correct? Endeavor had a lot of issues going public, right? I believe they tried to go public. I believe it's in 2019. That ended up not happening. And then they did go public in 2021. And you know, despite being this very high-profile talent agency, the stock, you know, as a publicly traded company, it didn't grow much, if at all, over time. And some of that was because of, I think, investor concern about their debt. But anyway, listening to those comments, and I remember listening to those comments and talking about it at the time, well, he sounds like he's not going to make any transaction. And I think it's especially important to that last comment he says where he's speaking at the Morgan Stanley conference with an analyst named Ben Swinburne, who's always on the earnings calls. And Ben Swinburne points out the notion. I know they're speaking kind of in corporate speak, but he says, you know, basically he's asking him, would you be willing to use your equity to make a transaction? He's basically asking, would you be willing to make a stock deal? And they end up making an all stock deal. This is not a transaction that cost Endeavor money directly in the traditional, you know, way that these other offers were potentially offering all cash, just buy the entire company. This was a deal that created a new company with Endeavor stock and WB stock. But even Ari is saying, it sounds like he's saying he's not going to do that either. He's not going to use the company's equity to do something like that. But nonetheless, I mean, that's in March of 2023. A month later, he signed.
Weeks later.
It's early March, those comments are from, and the deal is signed, announced April 3rd. So it's a month, whatever. It's not a long time later. He's making that deal.
Yeah. And as we know from the timeline, I mean, they are like, obviously, like this is a deal like that. Like you are in heavy, active discussions, like finalizations. Like we had the story of, you know, Shapiro and Ari flying to Stanford, like right around this period, right, in early to mid March.
That's WB's own disclosure. In addition to what we're breaking in the story is there's direct contact between Ari and Vince McMahon in the middle of Vince's, you know, 6 month retirement in the summer of 2022, where they're texting each other, and we have, you know, the words that are the title of the article. He sends, we have records. These are records provided by TKO's own attorneys, I believe, where Ari is, you know, sending him some TikTok video links. He's talking to him about Bill Burr and potentially getting him special access to see Bill Burr at Fenway Park. But then you're sending him a couple of voice messages that we don't know the contents of, but then ending that with this line, I will be your greatest partner. So perhaps they were talking about, maybe they were having phone conversations, maybe, but at least we do see that he's sending him voice messages and then saying, after that, I will be your greatest partner. So it's suggested that they were talking about something, perhaps more serious than Bill Burr.
Maybe they were coming together to do some TikTok memes.
They could have been. I mean, those would have a good chance of going viral, I think.
I think so. Great virality. I think so we know this fact because of this correspondence. Like Ari and Vince are having, you know, deep conversations in the immediate aftermath of Vince's resignation. There is a meeting that goes on at Gallagher's Steakhouse, who's getting some tremendous pub this week, in New York. That happens on August the 10th, with Nick Khan and Stephanie McMahon joining Vince for that meeting.
To be absolutely literal, what we have is a text message of them planning to have a lunch on August the 10th at Gallagher's Steakhouse. Vince says, is it okay if I bring Stephanie and Nick? And Ari Emanuel says, okay, yes, with a flex emoji. So they made a plan. We don't have records at this moment to say, yes, that meeting took place. But we do have two co-CEOs, you know, being brought along apparently by Vince McMahon.
And I thought it was worth revisiting. I'm not going to read all of these because they're lengthy, but the exchanges between Vince McMahon and the board of directors at the end of 2022 gives us some of our deepest insight into this power play that Vince McMahon undergoes. And I think that you would be really naive not to think that this was months in the planning stages of Vince McMahon of how do I get back onto the board in such a way that I also protect myself? Because let's remember, like, the Vince McMahon stigma is an extremely negative one in 2022. And as a public company, the return of Vince McMahon could very well influence the stock price, if not for the protection that he has with himself of I am coming back with the sole purpose of exploring these strategic alternatives. And this is what he lays out, stating that, with the completion of the special committee investigation, that has been publicly disclosed, I believe WWE is a unique opportunity during this critical juncture to maximize value for its shareholders and other stakeholders, specifically given the rapidly evolving media landscape in which more and more companies are seeking to own the intellectual property offered on their streaming platforms. I firmly believe that the best thing to do for all of WWE shareholders and other stakeholders is to undertake a comprehensive review of strategic alternatives. And we skip down. For these reasons, it is critical for me to rejoin the board as executive chairman to work alongside our management team in leading the exploration of strategic alternatives and media rights negotiations. And it is necessary to fulfill my commitment to do what is best for WWE. Ends it by a happy holidays from Vince McMahon. The board responds on December 27th of 2022. We write in response to your letter of December the 20th. And there are pleasantries at the beginning. With respect to your suggestion regarding a process to evaluate strategic alternatives and your role in that process, we are prepared to initiate such a process and are happy to work with you to ensure that it is the best process for the company. We would welcome you and your advisors playing an important role, including working together to identify the full range of potential alternatives and counterparties. To that end, we suggest your bankers and lawyers meet with our bankers and lawyers in the first week of January. Although we welcome your participation in the launch of a strategic alternatives review process, it is also our unanimous view that your return to the company at this time, while government investigations into your conduct by the U.S. Attorney's Office and SEC are still pending, would not be prudent from a shareholder's value perspective. And they're including a draft letter providing the board will not agree to the shareholder demand that the company file suit against you on the conditions that you confirm your commitment to repay all of the investigation-related expenses. Vince McMahon, I appreciate your timely response to my December 20th letter, which is is 7 days a timely manner. I would say with Christmas in the middle of there, I feel Vince is being semi-sincere here with this comment, or was he expecting an immediate response? Like, Vince, we can't wait to have you back. How quickly can we make this official?
I think this is a formal letter. I'll give him the face value here.
Okay, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that.
Yes.
However, never good when the first line of this letter has the word however in it. It is surprising that you did not address what I had sought to make clear in my letter, namely that we have a unique but narrow window of opportunity to maximize shareholder value by combining the upcoming media rights negotiations with the strategic review process the board acknowledges is the right course of action for our shareholders. And the only way to fully capture that opportunity is by having me, the company's founder and controlling shareholder, return as executive chairman at this critical time so that I can work alongside the management team to unify the decision-making related to these interconnected initiatives. I would like to be clear that unless I have direct involvement and input as executive chairman from the outset, I will not be able to support or approve any media rights deals or strategic transaction. He goes on to say this position is not driven by self-interest or a lack of confidence in the company's management team, but rather by my commitment to doing what is best for WWE and all its shareholders, and by my strong belief that maximizing the outcome of these processes will require close coordination and unified and efficient decision-making. I sincerely hope we can work together to unlock this tremendous value potential. So this is Vince McMahon that, again, this was a unanimous vote by the board of directors, which at that time would have included one Nick Khan, and Vince McMahon comes back and says, let's just put the formalities to the side here. I am not asking you to return to the board. I am telling you that I am coming back because I've got a proverbial gun to your head that all of these, the media rights are going to be big in and of itself. And then above it, the potential of a merger or sale all requires my approval. And I hold the cards in this. And days after this, this is December 27th, January 6th, they formally announced Vince's return to the board as executive chairman. And there is also the removal of several board members and replacements with George Barrios, who gets the call, as will be documented in his June 2026 book, and former co-president Michelle Wilson onto the board.
Yes. And we, there's
so Stephanie much. Resigns right after this as well, just as a
right.
And to which, that,
which we should touch on, because I know people have many questions about that. We should know too. What's also in the new report is the involvement of Rain, which is an advisory firm. It's not new news that Rain was involved as an advisory firm. You often have many lawyers and many advisory firms with both parties to ensure that their interests are fully represented. We do have text messages showing that Jeff Sein, who is a representative of Rain, somebody who's involved with their advisement processes, is in touch with Vince McMahon throughout that summer while he's still retired. And Rain, the plaintiffs are especially interested in Rain's involvement, it seems, because Rain was so deeply involved with Endeavor. If you look at Rain's website and look at the deals that they show essentially on their resume, it's many, many deals, but there's a lot of Endeavor deals. They were involved with advising Endeavor's purchase of the UFC, of PBR, of going public, and that's of their acquisition of On Location, and that's just to name a few. They've been very involved with Endeavor, with Silver Lake. They did advise Vince on the XFL, but they were very involved with many of Endeavor's deals. And it's notable too that part of what has been reported here in this new report, according to documents, is you have, after Vince has made contact and apparently met with Jeff Sein of Rain, you have Ari Emanuel texting Vince that he knows that he's met with Jeff Sein. I think the plaintiffs may be raising that evidence to suggest that this was not a fair process. Your advisors may have been conflicted because these advisors had such close ties to Endeavor. I know there's been a lot of questions and some of the feedback I've seen to people who have read this article are, you know, raising questions about Stephanie McMahon and what is her dynamic with Vince. And I would say that the first and foremost, our interest in this case, I think, should be narrowly defined to what is most in the public interest, which is whether or not this stock, which was open for sale to the public, was being, you know, whether the shareholder interests were being fully protected and pursued in the strongest manner possible. I think people are looking at this evidence that she may have gone to a lunch to meet with Ari Emanuel, along with Nick Khan, their co-CEOs at the time. Vince is ostensibly out of the company. I mean, now by this time, this is August of 2022. By this time, she did go on SmackDown and lead this tribute, this thank you, Vince chant, by all appearances appearing to be on good terms. She becomes CEO and co-CEO at a time when Vince steps down on an interim basis and then steps down permanently. At that point, she becomes co-CEO. But she also, before that, went on temporary leave.
Yes.
From the company, where she stayed on as a member of the board of directors, but did step down on a temporary basis from her role as, at that time, chief brand officer. This is on May 19th, famous date, May 19th, 2022. Now, by this time, the board has been made aware of the allegations of Janelle Grant via an anonymous email. They learn about that in late March and August and in April. So by the time that Stephanie steps down on this temporary basis, about a month has gone by. Now, we don't know if that's directly related to those allegations, but the timing is conspicuous, right?
And I think it's also worth noting, just contextualizing, not stating this is all, like, you can draw a clear line between all of these, but in 2022, in this period, Paul Levesque had his heart issue the prior year, and he is as far removed
right.
from day-to-day at WWE as he has ever been. And it is like NXT has been completely rebranded as a like post-Paul Levesque version of NXT.
NXT 2.0.
The Wednesday Night War has ended and not favorably for NXT at that point. And, you know, like Paul Levesque is very much out of power at this time.
Many people were cut, were fired, essentially, including William Regal and Gabe Sapolsky and others who were
a lot of Levesque's hires
known to be close to him. Yes. Yeah.
So I think that that ties in as well to all of this. You know, we know that, you know, Vince, in hindsight, it's been reported, felt he got like some bad advice about resigning in July of 2022. And
it could contrast that with Mark Shapiro appears to know that he's going to come back that day.
So that's like, that's the interesting part here is, again, like this is like, you can't get into the mind of Vince McMahon, but is he looking at this from a standpoint of, my company didn't have my best interest here. I got bad advice. I could have weathered the storm. And here is Endeavor. These guys have my back. These guys like are, I, they are courting me. They are making me wanted. And is this a whole planning stage, whether it's involving Endeavor, whether it's involving Rain, whether it's involving his own private legal counsel? Like, there is, I'm very confident, a very clear getting all my ducks in a row with the sole objective of getting back as executive chairman in such a way that it protects the stock, gets me into my position. And if that means selling or merging this company, that's a step he is clearly willing to take. This is not an idea of, this has to be my McMahon-owned company. This is self-preservation for Vince McMahon, and this is the team I want to be attached with in Endeavor. And how that is all figured into this, like how much of this was essentially a wrapped-up deal by the time Vince is approaching the board at the end of the year. That's what the plaintiffs have to prove here. We can only speculate as to what is going on in this July to December period when it comes to Vince McMahon and who he is talking to, who he's being advised by. But you read those board letters, that's a guy that's getting A-level legal and advice at an extremely high level that he is not just coming in here with a theory or just – something out of left field. He is getting solid he had some strategic advice.
Those letters over for him before he sent them. And the evidence supports that he was at least in touch with Ari and with Rain, who would eventually advise WWE on this deal. And as part of this deal that they did make with Endeavor, after Endeavor agreed to cede an additional 6 percentage points, not the other way around, Vince did get a guarantee that he would stay with the company until he died or resigned or was incapacitated. Of course, he did resign less than a year later after the Janelle Grant lawsuit was filed and Slim Jim dropped out as a sponsor of Royal Rumble. But he did get his future in the company guaranteed at his will, at least.
So another clip we have here is January 2023, the Nick Khan media tour stops by the Bill Simmons podcast. So again, just to keep everyone on this timeline, late December 2022, Nick Khan, as a member of the board of directors, it's a unanimous vote not to bring Vince McMahon back as executive chairman. Vince McMahon steamrolls his way back to the board. And then in January, this is Nick Khan speaking with Bill Simmons about Vince McMahon's return.
My thought has always been, there's only one boss at WWE and it ain't me. Vince is obviously the founder, creator of the company. He's also the controlling shareholder, which, as you know, that's not a work term.
Right.
That's a legal term of art. So I think it was always my point of view, always Stephanie's point of view. At some point, he would come back. I think the way that he played it, to me, was smart, Bill, in that he went away for 5-6 months, which people, meaning the audience, seems to like. When somebody does that, and he came back and took control back of his company as a control shareholder. So it is the public's company as a publicly traded company, but with that controlling share, gave him a lot of authority and he used it. And I applaud him for doing so.
More and more, I think Nick Khan is a legal work of art.
He's a lawyer.
He is. He is. So Nick Khan is featured in a lot of this correspondence as well. Like
that quote, by the way, on the Bill Simmons podcast is included in
yes,
the plaintiff's complaint. What I think they're pointing to is that maybe Nick, you know, knew he was going to come back as well. And when you have him at this meeting with Ari Emanuel, and that is consistent with that.
It's hard to imagine that. Nick Khan also disclosed in some of these interviews that he was checking in with Vince during this time period. I mean, yeah. He is open about that.
He is the same interview. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is not a case of like, yeah, we have the steakhouse meeting that allegedly took place, but I'm like, there were other checkups as well. Mark Shapiro stating the same. I think it was with Alex Sherman that he would have breakfast with Vince McMahon. Like,
this is after his most recent.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not that time period at the point. But, so Nick Khan is certainly thrust in the midst of all of this. And we fast forward. That was January of 2023. April of 2023, the day after WrestleMania 39, there is the official announcement of the merger involving WWE and UFC. Before that, Nick Khan goes on CNBC and is asked about the potential of the sale, of whether or not Vince McMahon would be willing to step away if there is a buyer that does not want him involved. And Nick Khan conveys that Vince McMahon would be willing to step away if that was the case. He is not considering himself a necessary part of a new purchased WWE company. And of course, question about whether or not Vince McMahon is involved in creative at the time. Nick Khan says absolutely not. And for some, this was the biggest story coming out of this. The creative. Tell us about Vince's creative involvement at all of this, which is like buried at the bottom of your story, but has gotten a sizable amount of attention.
Yes.
Was Cody supposed to win, Brandon?
Here we have allegations of fiduciary breaches of fiduciary duty related to a scandal involving sexual misconduct. And what people are most interested in is the creative process.
Want to know if Cody was supposed to win
WrestleMania.
I don't care about these sexual misconduct allegations. I don't care about fiduciary duty. Just tell me who made the call.
February 28th, 2023. So a month before Nick Khan says on CNBC that he says definitively that Vince is not involved in creative. We have a text message from Vince McMahon to Nick Khan saying, This is a text from me to Paul and Bruce. He doesn't say who Paul and Bruce are, but you can use your imagination. Hey guys, just double checking. Does Roman and Cody know the new creative regarding WM, WrestleMania, I take it, and next year? Vince is continuing to relay this conversation. He says, Bruce says, not to my knowledge. I don't know if Paul has had a conversation with either. Roman's first appearance, we spoke, is Friday in DC. Both will be there in person. And Vince says, he then said to Paul, Paul, have you? Of course, you is spelled with a single letter U.
Busy man.
He's relaying this conversation to the president of the company, the sole CEO, I should say, at this point. I think it's his title. He is the leader of the company. Relaying this conversation that he's having, presumably with Paul Levesque, the head of creative, and Bruce Pritchard, a key creative executive, long time. And Nick Khan responds with one word.
I can't with a straight face. Langis.
Langis. Langis. To which Vince McMahon responds, what in the blue hell is Langis, LOL? And Nick Khan says, read it backwards, !!
Now, does this not kind of betray the exact nature of a code word? Like, why are we going to the extent of spelling this? I have thought about this exchange so much. Like, is he specifically stating it? Is he writing it backwards as an idea that, like, this is circumventing if ever other outside eyes get on this? And then it's basically, it's like, insert your PIN number. What's my PIN number again? And writing out the PIN number right in the exchange here. Like, this is, I don't know how covert this was.
Yeah. So it appears to be Nick Khan directing a conversation to be away from conventional text messaging and into the Signal app. The Signal app is known for its secure messaging, its encryption, but also its auto delete feature. You can set all your messages with a person to delete every whatever interval you pick. Now, this is why this is in this lawsuit, is because of the Signal aspect. I don't think the creative process is something that the plaintiffs are digging deeply into. They're concerned that many of these conversations between key executives during this very sensitive merger and acquisition process were not properly preserved. When you're selling a company, especially a big publicly traded company, A lot of times your legal team will tell you, hey, you've got to preserve all your communications at this time and be really, really diligent about this. Because these kinds of processes, I mean, even if all this stuff with Ari in the summer, even if we didn't have records of this, there may have been somebody going after a shareholder lawsuit in some way, maybe would not have gotten as far as this. But there are, you know, if you're a publicly traded company, there are almost inevitably going to be shareholder lawsuits. So you've got to be really ready to protect all your evidence so that if anybody makes any allegations, you can produce all your records and show that you did nothing wrong. So when you're WWE and you're selling your company, you're supposed to preserve all your records. And the plaintiffs are very concerned that a lot of these communications between key executives concerning this process, perhaps, were on Signal where they were auto-deleted and cannot be produced. So that we have currently a lot of litigation about something called spoliation, deletion and spoliation of evidence. And the plaintiffs are asking for certain orders related to that. What could end up happening is you could have, if this doesn't go well for the defendants here, you could end up having what's called an adverse inference, I believe, in that if evidence cannot be produced, the judge would have to make a decision that if this evidence cannot be produced, then we're just going to assume when we make a decision about this case that evidence would have not would have been unfavorable to this party. So that is sort of the worst case scenario for the defendants as it concerns this. So that may be something also that unfolds as this lawsuit continues.
It does open a door for the plaintiffs to at least establish that there is a mechanism in place where here is something as, you know, to the grander picture, something as mundane as a creative decision, and the answer is taking this quote unquote offline or taking it to a private messaging app. If that is the threshold to go to Signal, what other discussions are happening on Signal would be my argument, right, if I was the plaintiffs.
And they're trying to get records as a concerned Signal for four individuals in particular. Nick Khan, Stephanie McMahon. I have previously incorrectly said that it's Paul Levesque, but it is Ms. Stephanie McMahon Levesque. Brad Blum and Ari Emanuel. Of course, only one of those individuals are a party to this lawsuit. That's Nick Khan. The others have been deposed, and they've certainly, you know, they have been served with subpoenas, and I believe they've all produced documents as well at this point. But they want lawyers to sit down with them and take all sorts of screenshots of every device they've used Signal app and go through the app to see what records they can produce from it. And I believe the defendants have said that they've already produced all this stuff. So this is something that still is being litigated and the judge has not yet made a decision on.
So from Brandon's story, after WWE and Endeavor announced their deal on April 3rd, 2023, senior executives at Liberty Media privately contradicted that the process was competitive. Liberty's then president and CEO, Greg Maffei, and a senior managing director at the investment firm Blackstone, Joseph Beretta, exchanged emails. "Looks like they've been cooking this one up for a while," Beretta wrote, sharing a link to a news article about the deal. Maffei replied, "Yup, pre-wired." Maffei did not elaborate, but his comment can be read as expressing that much of a transaction was already in place before the formal process began. So, I mean, it's just a simple exchange. We don't know to the extent of, like, what Maffei is basing this upon, but it certainly, like, again, it gives credence to the plaintiff side that here you had someone in Greg Maffei that you would think would be very, very deep in the process, and that was his takeaway.
Yeah, and it seems quite likely that Liberty Media is one of these bidders that is referred to synonymously in WWE's 2023 filing. They also in their own account refer to giving one of the parties comp tickets to attend a house show in Colorado, and Colorado is where Liberty Media just happens to be headquartered. This is in the early hours of the morning, so very soon after this deal is announced, you have this individual from Blackstone asking Greg, you know, raising this to Greg Maffei's attention. He says, "Yep, pre-wired." But we also have, in addition to that,
is there any chance he was really groggy at this hour and he meant to? It was just an autocorrect and wanted to say, "Yeah, this is pretty wild."
We would have to ask him. And then we also have another Liberty Media executive, Marty Patterson. There's an article from Puck by Dylan Byers being shared around. This is the article from Puck that is titled, I believe, The Art of Ari's Deal, talking about how this was a competitive process, essentially, that they cite, I have it in here, what exactly is the background comment that they have, where he cites, as I lose it here, where he cites that there were pitches in March of 2023 and another more emotional one a week later. He says there were stiff competition, and he says sources familiar with the deal described that. And then he also quotes Mark Shapiro directly on the record, saying that it was nip and tuck all the way. And what we have here in these emails is Liberty Media, which presumably was involved with bidding on the deal and attempting to buy WWE, saying that the article meaningfully overstates the competitiveness of the process, which serves Endeavor WWE interests.
And that takes us to the present. This is still an ongoing story. There may be more that becomes unsealed.
One decision that was made recently by the judge, Vice Chancellor J. Travis Laster, is that TKO WWE does have to produce documents related to the DOJ and SEC investigations. So when I say this is an underreported story, as it relates to much of the scandal and the allegations surrounding Vince McMahon, this shareholder lawsuit touches on so many of those stories, and it's just not central to the stories that I think the audience is more familiar with, in that, you know, we know that the Department of Justice investigated Vince McMahon for potential criminal charges. No charges were filed, but we just don't know much about that. That's the nature of criminal investigations. But they are asking for, the plaintiffs did ask for all of your communications that and all the documents that you provided to the Department of Justice and to the Securities and Exchange Commission. There was litigation over that. The judge did decide, yes, you do have to turn those over. Those are relevant documents to this case.
Are there any final points you wanted to make just on the story, maybe any feedback you've received over the last couple of days, anything you're kind of keeping your attention on as it regards this story? Like, I think you summarized it well. Like, the shareholder lawsuit, it ties in so much that we have been covering the last 3 years. Like, it attaches, like, all the biggest stories in Vince McMahon's orbit, from the merger to the sexual misconduct allegations, the federal investigation into him, this whole board power play that went on, and all of the key players in and around TKO.
I would just say that this is something I will continue to try to cover as diligently as possible, because all of these records sort of came out at once related to a notice of challenge. There may need to be additional filings of you to challenge future records. All I could challenge at the time that I filed the challenge were records that were filed, not only filed, but had already been filed. This, we're still in the midst of a dense legal process. There will be additional litigation. At some point, there may be motions for summary judgment. At some point later, if this gets far enough, there will be a trial currently set for June. So,
which is not that far away. Like, when we talk about, like, there's going to be a lot of movement in this, like whether there is ultimately just a settlement here with the shareholders, whether this, as we get closer to that date, like, I don't feel that this is not going to be a case like the Janelle Grant one that has just dragged until the judge makes a decision on arbitration or not. This is one where, like, there is going to be significant progress, and June is not that far away, that it's, I think we'll see a lot of movement in the coming months.
Right. And this is Delaware Chancery Court, which is known for being relatively fast compared to some other courts. And this is where, you know, all these businesses get incorporated in Delaware for various reasons. And, like, this is the court where big corporate shareholder lawsuits happen. And this is where it is. But this just may be an iterative process, and we'll continue to ask for records to report on subjects that are in the public interest to know about.
Well, if I could summarize Brandon's work, he's not going to say it himself, but I would certainly be giving him a flex emoji on the reporting of this story. I will have to take you one day to Gallagher's Steakhouse, maybe, for the lunch menu. We'll get the three-course menu.
I'll look it over.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
All right. That was our opening topic. And on that note, we're going to do a condensed year in review. Just looking at some of the big stories. We're not going to go crazy into all of them. There was a lot, as you could imagine, with any year. This was one that had a lot of business stories, a lot that had implications in 2025. There's also a number that I think we're going to see the true effects of in the year or even years to come. But kind of going in a semi-chronological order here, the year kicked off with WWE launching on Netflix, the beginning of their deal, a huge event at the Intuit Dome that did a then arena gate record of $4.8 million, which was only topped by John Cena's retirement earlier this month at the Capital One Center in Washington, D.C. And of course, The Rock coming out, shouting out Bella Bajaria, Ted Sarandos, and also making nice with Cody Rhodes. And then, you know what? I know Bixen's man is under the weather, but he's really got to start from the beginning of the show. And then going on NXT the next night and lecturing any critics. Just The Rock is thinking 20 steps ahead, okay? Let it play out, because The Rock knows where this is all going. And boy, did The Rock have a compass for 2025. Never has a man been so present, yet been so far away.
Yes. Does that bring us to your next topic, which is the WrestleMania announcement that he made? That was in February, I believe.
Yeah, this was one of the most amazing stories, and one that it really does underscore just how nuts this year was. We literally got The Rock on television at the Smoothie King Center announcing, New Orleans, we're bringing WrestleMania back. WrestleMania 42 is here. 2026, get ready. We're coming. And then Brandon Thurston, not going to New Orleans. Instead, we're going to the highest bidder. Just because we announce things doesn't mean this process is over, okay? We want to have a fair process for all bidders, even when we have a public announcement. Las Vegas lands the two-night WrestleMania for the second year in a row, and we owe you one, is what WWE tells New Orleans. Thus far, the make good has been, hey, we're going to give you money in the bank next year, okay? You're getting money in the bank and a future WrestleMania. Operative word, future.
Big plans for WWE and New Orleans for 2026 and beyond.
Yes. It's like, we have a great gift for you. Just can't tell you when it's coming. So that will give a, well, and we know, and you know, this attaches very well. We know that Vegas is getting Mania this year, and then the following year it will go to Saudi Arabia. I think almost a guarantee that this was going to happen at some point. It was only a question of what year it would go Saudi Arabia, and it will be 2027.
We can add on Las Vegas in particular. I mean, we don't know much about what played into that decision still about actually announcing New Orleans would be the home of WrestleMania in 2026 and then going back on that and then putting it in Las Vegas. It's worth pointing out, though, that we were able to report that in 2025, with WrestleMania in Las Vegas, WWE did get a $5 million site fee. I believe they may have gotten some marketing value as well on top of that, but they also got a tax credit. Nevada has a strong tax credit program that gave them an additional $4.2 million in tax credits. So you could say that they got more than $9 million in incentives to have WrestleMania in Las Vegas, and they're going to do that again. We don't know what the details are around what sort of value they'll extract for that, but We'll see if that is helpful, if that was encouraging to them in terms of how much money they got out of it. You know, we've seen a lot of reports in mainstream news this year about how challenged the tourism business is in Las Vegas. They may have been hurting bad for a big event like WrestleMania in Las Vegas.
I think that plays a huge role. Like, it's been very well known that Las Vegas has been hurt very significantly when it comes to tourism and WWE. Their announcement was well, the Las Vegas Stadium Authority confirmed to you 118,641 attending over two nights.
To be fair, I didn't have to dig for this. They put this on their website. They did put the attendance on their website. We might as well disclose too that the getting records related to this year's WrestleMania and potentially next year's WrestleMania is the subject of a petition that is in court in Nevada State Court that is still pending and fully.
Is there a Saudi Arabian Stadium Authority?
I don't know if there's a Saudi Arabia public records law. I honestly have not bothered looking into that, but if there is, let me know.
Yeah, we'd love to explore that one further. On the AEW side of things, the year began with AEW simulcasting Dynamite and Collision on HBO Max, and then beginning with the All Out event in September, their pay-per-views were made available on Max as well. And what was the results, the trends that you saw throughout the year?
They're doing viewership on Max. Big numbers?
They are doing numbers. What numbers? We don't know.
Who knows? You did try to ask Tony Khan about that directly.
Yes.
And he said
he's... I asked him how many people on Earth know these numbers for certain. He does not know, but it's a small number.
He said he doesn't know.
I take Tony Khan at his word. He does not know
these
numbers.
I think if they know anything, they don't know much about
it. It blows my mind. It totally blows my mind that they do not disclose those numbers to their own broadcast partners. But AEW, it was a really interesting year for the company, because I think if we look a year ago, they've signed their new rights renewal with WBD. So they're in good standing, at least in terms of like the overall health of the company. But I would say perception wise, they were in a much bleaker state a year ago. I think there was a lot of fatigue with regard to the Death Riders. There was an overall WWE is red hot a year ago. They are going into the Netflix era. There's so much appeal to the WWE product. And throughout this year, like, you had, you know, what you would have assumed on its face would be a siphoning of its audience if HBO Max is being introduced. And naturally, you would think like their television numbers would be hurt by this. Then you had WWE really ramp up a lot of head to head battles with the company, using NXT first as a barrier for AEW's big shows. And then all roads lead to July the 12th, to be exact, when they stage both an NXT event in the afternoon going against All In Texas and a Saturday night's main event, which would go against the trail end of All In Texas. But from all accounts, All In Texas was a big success. WrestleTix announced 27,245 tickets distributed. You had the scan count of 21,973 for the show in Arlington. And on the WWE side, it was their least watched Saturday night's main event. How much you attribute that to AEW is hard to decipher, but it was also the last Saturday night's main event that would be broadcast on NBC. And I thought that was a very under-focused on story. The fact that WWE, at a time when UFC is touting the CBS window being such a big part of this new deal with Paramount, and conversely, in the other side of the company, they lost a network window to go exclusive to Peacock. I think that was a big loss for WWE, not having that NBC exposure and instead limiting these shows to Peacock.
It's something that I believe we heard Nick Khan talk about in the lead up to the media rights renewal, that having some sort of broadcast special, something in line with that was discussed as something that they wanted. And I think if you look at the ratings, NBC may have made a calculation that, well, we're already simulcasting this on Peacock, by the way. You can make the same excuses for Max and TBS, I guess, here.
Yep.
But, you know, looking at what it was doing on NBC, NBC may well have calculated that, well, we could put something else in its place, and let's put that over on Peacock, where maybe it's best served, and maybe it's having a strong audience over there, and we can just put something that is more profitable for us on NBC that Saturday's main event is not going to outperform.
So the head-to-head battles continued in September. We had the first WWE main roster pay-per-view against a AEW pay-per-view with the launch of WrestlePalooza, brand new, exciting name to start a new franchise in WWE, combing back the ECW archives. And also, ahead of, well, they announced their 5-year deal with ESPN that we are of the impression was going to go into effect in early 2026 with WrestleMania. Instead, they kickstart the deal in September with WrestlePalooza, and Peacock is kind of left with the NXT PLEs, the library, which today, folks, if you're in the US, your last day to watch WWE archived content on ESPN. I know that's what Brandon's doing as soon as we get off here. And the result is AEW makes another move to go in the afternoon to avoid going head-to-head with WrestlePalooza. And it appeared that All Out did not seem to get obliterated in this slot. And since then, we have not seen any more head-to-head battles against AEW pay-per-views, but remains to be seen if this will be revisited again and we see any more head-to-heads.
And I think the big story so far with the ESPN deal is just the lack of complete coverage and distribution for U.S. households. Now, I understand anybody can, of course, subscribe for $30 and get access to the ESPN Unlimited. Is that what we're calling it? I know that YouTube and Disney did come to terms after they had a coverage dispute, and they did make a deal that includes access to this ESPN Unlimited app where the PLEs are broadcasting. As a YouTube TV subscriber myself now, I haven't checked lately, but I don't think that's going into effect until the new year. At least soon after this deal started, I was not able to log in yet. I do expect that that's going to happen in the new year. I would expect it to happen by WrestleMania, but not immediately. So that's how many households, maybe around the neighbor. They don't report this, but in the neighborhood of 10 million households, I think that is. And I believe Comcast is still outstanding as well. And again, maybe that will be something that's baked into a new deal between Disney and Comcast for distribution. But there's still a large portion of the country who have access to ESPN who cannot watch this unless they pay $30. Sounds like a paper business to me. I thought pay-per-view was dead.
In a roundabout way, that's exactly what we have moved back toward.
But eventually, it will be all these coverage deals will cycle through, and presumably, if you have ESPN, depending on what tier you're on, if this could get more complicated, you might have access to the PLEs.
WWE purchases majority control of AAA in partnership with Philippe, and they have a 51% stake. They announced this over WrestleMania weekend, and then the following week, we had our interview of the year with a representative from Philippe, who we're still waiting to reconnect with and present the best interview we could possibly have together.
Well, now what happened there? They someone from Philippe, an executive from Philippe, agreed to do an interview with us, which we planned to do live on the air with that executive, and then told us, I believe while we were on the air, that
it was like 5 minutes before we were supposed to go live as we were in the midst of the show.
Well, I think it was while we were on the air and maybe.
Oh, yeah, it was while we were on the air. Yes. And before they were supposed to come on.
Yeah. And said that she wanted to postpone it and that TKO wanted to get involved, too, and do an interview with them, with us.
Yeah.
Needless How did that say, go? That's not happened. I don't think that's happened.
No. How many follow-ups did we send after that? I think we put our annoyance level to a 12, and I was perfectly fine with that.
Well, I told them, I think what happened is TKO dissuaded you from doing it in not so many words. But we didn't get a clear answer.
Open invite to come back? We'll tape it in advance. So they had their first card June the 7th with Worlds Collide in L.A. They would also strike a deal with Fox in Mexico that will be broadcasting AAA in South and Central America, excluding Brazil. I would say overall, the cards have been really well received. They had just an excellent card a few weeks ago in Guadalajara. I think Mexico has been on fire this year with both companies, like led by CMLL, which had just an incredible year. They sold over 1 million tickets alone to Arena Mexico. And I think that there are probably more people than ever that are now watching the AAA product, even if it is in the WWE lens of things, and what this product will look like a year from now. That's going to be an interesting story to watch.
Yes. I don't know hardly anything. I'm sure the Cubs fan is very upset. I know hardly anything other than CML sounds like it's having a great year.
It had
CML in particular. Yeah.
I think in many ways, CMLL was the top promotion of 2025. When you think about, you know, where this was going to be, like there was such a concern about like WWE and what would the impact be on CMLL. And granted, it's been basically 6 months of WWE control of AAA. CMLL is red hot. I mean, I'm not watching all their shows, but I'm watching most of their Friday night shows. And
Authentic Lucha Libre, are branding themselves as the only true home of Lucha Libre.
Yeah, and I mean, the contrast could not be more clear when WWE is doing introductory videos for like their last show and say Lucha Libre is no longer a sideshow. I was like, let's embrace the sideshow, because this is hardly a sideshow. This is like, I don't know if there's any company like, could you imagine a WWE running Madison Square Garden every Friday and selling it out for 75% of those weeks?
Well, they were in Smokefield. They went to Madison Square Garden after Vince took over, and before then they were in Smokefield.
That's right. That's right. It was just high school gyms until 85, right? And then they got the smoke bands, and then they expand the two arenas.
Global Extravaganza. Yeah.
Did you? This is why we go so long. Jay Moore, the comedian, recently interviewed Seth Rollins, and Rollins brought up like in the 80s how it was just a different era. They were just in high school gyms, and Jay Moore is like, oh, wait a minute. I was a fan then. I saw them at the Brendan Byrne Arena, the Meadowlands. I saw them at Madison Square Garden at that time. And Seth, it's like, yeah, fair point. So there you go. Jay Moore fact checking in real time. Vince McMahon was, we'll go into, wait a minute. This calls for, where do we have it here? The legal stories of the year. Vince McMahon fined by the SEC. He was fined $400,000 and ordered to reimburse WWE for an additional $1.3 million. That was reported right at the beginning of the year on January the 10th for that McMahon violated the Securities and Exchange Act by knowingly circumventing WWE's internal accounting controls, and that he directly or indirectly made or caused to be made false or misleading statements to WWE's auditor. So as a result, McMahon was fined.
Yeah, there's a larger reflection of the world, I think, in that. Look, if WWE was a private company, none of this might have become public. I don't know enough about how private companies are run, but certainly public companies have boards of directors and they have obligations to public shareholders. This may have been easier for Vince McMahon and for WWE to overcome without further scrutiny. That is what I'm referring to. Are the allegations of sexual misconduct from what emerged from this scandal in particular are four different NDAs totaling something in the neighborhood of $14 million that should have been reported on their books. Now it doesn't matter if W paid for it or Vince paid for it with his personal money. He paid for it, signed. He got a liability release for himself personally and for the company. The company gained something, therefore the company should have been charged and it should have been reported on their books that they spent millions of dollars. But anyway, we know about this largely because W is a public company, because shareholders must have their interests protected. We know more about what's going on than we would otherwise because of this shareholder lawsuit, because shareholders have rights that need to be protected. If there are allegations from individuals about how they claim that they were abused, that's one thing. But what has really produced a lot of transparency is protecting shareholder interests. Shareholders are number one in this world.
I think that's been made loud and clear. It's not the infraction. It's, hey, did we pay for this? Janelle Grant files her amended complaint in January. This outlines several other allegations, including that Vince McMahon had her make sexualized content for people such as Michael Hayes, and getting more specific in some of the complaints that contrast with the original complaint that was filed a year earlier. On the same front, John Laurinaitis did the big flop/flip and was dropped as a defendant in the Janelle Grant lawsuit and heading into anonymity throughout the year.
Yes. So he's no longer a party to this case. But by the way, this case has been sitting pending, waiting for a decision, not on arbitration directly, on the question of discovery related to arbitration. So the judge is not weighing currently whether or not the Grant case should go to arbitration or stay in public court. The judge is weighing whether or how much discovery Janelle Grant should be able to request. At which point, I'm sure there will be litigation over specifics of that. So it's been sitting there since for about 6 months. So I'm surprised it has gone as long as it has.
Yes, it's been essentially, we're coming up on 2 years of the decision process in that case. However, WWE didn't need as much time. It clocked in at 18 months before they made a decision on Brock Lesnar and bringing him back at SummerSlam to a much criticized decision by the company, but one in which was, I mean, it's sort of part and parcel with you bring back a figure that might upset people, but over time, like, he just assimilates back in, and that's kind of what we've seen with Brock Lesnar. He will be in plans for 2026. Very limited that they have used him since coming back, but he has come back in a major role and had the match with John Cena, did the match at War Games, and presumably will be heavily figured in the lead up to WrestleMania as well. Maybe we will see Brock in Saudi Arabia at the end of the month, a man I think we will definitely see in Saudi Arabia at the end of the month, much like he was earlier this year, CM Punk. To send, what a trip that the man took. Going to Riyadh, apologizing for past comments, and the greatest wrestling moment John Cena has ever experienced.
It brought John Cena to tears to see CM Punk apologize for his hateful, he said some pretty hateful things about a culture.
Did he?
That's what John Cena said.
Yeah, yeah. I did not take that from CM Punk's comments. He had stated what was a comment clearly directed at The Miz, instructing him to go suck a blood-covered dick, which has forced me to have to recite
blood,
that tweet.
Blood money. Blood money.
Sorry, covered. I always mess it up. I don't make it grosser
than it is.
Somehow, I try. But yeah, CM Punk, he woke up in a bad mood that day. We all have bad days, right?
And Seth Rollins has said, look, you think we don't have blood money in this country?
I thought Seth Rollins, how is Seth Rollins any different than what CM Punk said in 2019?
What did Seth Rollins say?
Seth Rollins said exactly what you just said there, that it's like, yes, you don't think there's blood money here in the U.S.? He's acknowledging blood money is...
He's acknowledging that there's blood money.
Yes.
Okay.
Does he too need to now ask for forgiveness?
Every country does bad things, so...
He also said, we also get paid by the U.S. You don't think there's blood money there? How does WWE get paid by the U.S.?
Well, they get paid by... media companies and wrestling fans.
Is that the U.S. government?
They do get paid by some governments for site fees more and more.
Localized governments.
Not to the tune of $50 million, not to the tune of, you know, a WrestleMania gate or two.
Why does Saudi Arabia not pay competitive bids that are comparable to the U.S. ones?
They're just generous. They're just really generous.
There's no expectation of government. Anything above that.
They just really need great entertainment to revitalize their economy.
WrestleMania, as we mentioned, announced for Saudi Arabia next year, where they will be going. We will see who is attached to that card. It's probably going to be one of the most expensive shows. Probably will be the most expensive show in WWE history, at least.
It'll probably be the most lucrative, too.
It will. We had the WWE and TNA formally announce a multi-year relationship. And with that, TNA signing a deal with AMC. Carlos Silva had stated they were seeking $7 to $10 million per year. And it was reported to be a 4-year deal and will go into effect in just a couple of weeks. They will launch January 15th. Yeah. And while you are certainly going to see talent migrate to NXT or WWE main roster itself, like Joe Hendry, for instance, there will probably be more. I think TNA overall, they've benefited greatly from this relationship. They did tremendous business for both Slammiversary and their Bound for Glory shows. Maybe not as high as they had touted publicly, but they have their reasoning.
Very successful shows.
Yes, they were very successful shows. And yeah, we will see what the impact is moving to AMC.
No pun intended.
we are certainly going to get many puns with TNA in 2026, but definitely their most significant TV deal, at least since Spike, which was ended in the end of 2014.
Yes, as in terms of coverage, they will pretty much double the number of U.S. households that they're in.
We had the death of Hulk Hogan in July that maybe to the broader audience was the biggest wrestling-related story of 2025. Just a strange set of circumstances. And when we go to that first Raw at the Intuit Dome, like the last real appearance by Hulk Hogan in front of a wrestling specific crowd, we would get him, you know, in other appearances throughout the year, but that was his last WWE appearance, and he is booed out of the Intuit Dome and then completely roasted the next day on Pat McAfee's show, for it. And then, you know, Hogan would do some interviews after, and it's because, you know, the last time I was here in LA, I was a heel. I was Hollywood Hogan the last time I was here. It's like, huh? I don't think that was why they were booing you. I don't think that was the case at all. You've been to LA many times since then. And
he was there to promote Real American Beer. There's that combination. That combination of, I don't know how much people are aware of it, but the Real American Beer being sort of this anti-Bud Light, which had a backlash because of a commercial that they did.
Dana's told the right it's okay to embrace Bud Light again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's given everyone permission.
We'll note that then. Yeah. And the embrace of Donald Trump in LA.
A lot of factors that were attached to it. And then we had, you know, it was largely like Bubba the Love Sponge, like detailing a lot of like how significant his health issues were. He underwent a surgery in May, and, you know, you could see just based on the fact here was a guy that so much of his business is in online social posts, doing appearances, and a lot of that, it was either canned footage. You saw him away from the promotion for Real American Freestyle, which he was involved in with Eric Bischoff. And then in July, dies. And you can't say completely unexpected, because these stories were out there, and it was, you know, the case of, you know, in the aftermath, so much attention that was placed upon the nature of his death. Brooke Hogan doing a lot of interviews, including going on with Bubba the Love Sponge. So it revisited the entire sex tape scandal involving Hogan and Bubba the Love Sponge as well. So there was a massive spotlight on Hulk Hogan. And I would say, like, the coverage, like, it did, it was not this whitewashing of Hulk Hogan. Like, there was a lot of sympathy towards Hulk Hogan, but there was also a lot of discussion about the last 10 years of his life and what that projection was to his fan base.
Using the N-word and referring to himself as a racist might have contributed to why he was booed. But, I mean, he had been in front of W audiences a number of times and been received better than that. But, yeah.
We mentioned CMLL, like, just, I thought, a giant year. And then towards the end of the year, the most dangerous combination. Big data and panel. Something we wouldn't have even known what that means a year ago, and wreaked havoc on professional wrestling. And this does not feel like this is going to be a methodology that is changing anytime soon and has just become the new normal. And it's not, this story is really specific to pro wrestling in that, look at all your other sports coverage. A lot of it, it's focusing on how big data and panel has lifted audiences, and wrestling has kind of become this casualty as a result of it. Not all episodes the same, but, like, Brandon, you got the comparison points of just panel only data, comparing it to the episodes where we have the big data and panel and seeing what the differences are. And, you know, wrestling, it's certainly more impactful on its younger audience. But in the case of programs like NXT and SmackDown, we don't have the question of, like, what is the audience that's streaming this? Like, this is what we have to gauge it, as opposed to, like, Dynamite, Collision, that do have simulcasting, and, of course, Raw, that doesn't figure into this discussion at all.
Right. And the best theory I have is that, you know, what many others have said is that maybe it's just a matter of wrestling not being given the exception that sports are being given which are also longer programs that people leave the TV on for, and therefore their viewership is not being counted in the same way that sports are, and therefore sports are getting a benefit that wrestling is not getting, wrestling not being labeled as sports, perhaps because it's predetermined. So this is not something that has changed. You know, it's not as if it doesn't look like there's been a change to the methodology to adjust for wrestling to remedy this. It just either the one methodology wasn't accurate and this one is, or this methodology isn't accurate and that one was, or both. I don't know.
Yeah, not to say like it doesn't matter, but much like for forever we would have the complaints about Nielsen, like how accurate is Nielsen or
TV
how
ratings
much
don't matter. TV well, ratings.
You'd hear this all the time, but it's like whatever your complaints about Nielsen are, if you're selling advertising against these numbers and that's what the advertisers take as gospel, then that's all that matters. It's like we can argue the like if there's flaws, if there's errors in this, but this is what is going to be taken as reflective of the televised audience that is watching these shows. And if that is the case, like it certainly is one that maybe this is not going to be impactful, but come the next rounds of negotiations for some of these shows, like is this like what happened in 2025 where you see this dip? And is that going to impact what is the lifeblood of these companies, which are their media rights?
I mean, these ratings are currency, right? Like as much as people can often and incorrectly say that ratings don't matter, ratings matter to the extent that advertising revenue matters for these TV programs that sell ads. And what an advertiser is buying, they're buying the number of impressions that they can get from your TV show. And how do you measure that with Nielsen ratings? And that's the leading currency. So if your ratings are suddenly down by 20% as they are in some of these comparisons, well, your advertising value as a wrestling program is 20% less valuable. Now, a lot of wrestling SmackDown probably in particular, maybe the only one, can make an argument that they should justify carriage value too, because they're on the USA Network and they are by far the number one TV show on the USA Network. USA Network is charging cable systems a dollar or two for every subscriber that they have. And who's driving that? SmackDown is the biggest player with a few other properties, right? So you can make the argument if you're SmackDown that, okay, yes, I generate ad revenue for you, but I also generate carriage value because I am the biggest show on this network. But the others, what are you getting value out of them for? Advertising? Maybe some crossover marketing promotions. This matters quite a bit. And now, as long as you're living in a world where you're one of the number one shows, you might still be okay. But this is a real concern. And everybody, except for CW, doesn't want to say so out loud.
I was going to say that they're fighting the battle all by their lonesome. And then finally, rounding things out, we had UFC signing a 7-year, $7.7 billion deal with Paramount for all of its rights, including pay-per-views that will become available to subscribers in the U.S. only beginning, January 1st. And it'll kick off with the UFC 324 pay-per-view in a couple of weeks. And, of course, they will have the White House card in June. It also was a year where we got the full launch of Zuffa Boxing, working in association with the General Entertainment Authority of Saudi Arabia. They promoted the Canelo Alvarez-Terrence Crawford fight at Allegiant Stadium back in September and signed a media rights deal with, you guessed it, Paramount Skydance. They'll do their next card January 23rd in Vegas. And by the way, they are also pushing the Muhammad Ali American Boxing Revival Act.
Yes. And Nick Khan appeared on a conference call to push for that as well.
Yes, we got an insight into what Nick Khan's podcast playlist looks like based on his media tour in advance of the hearing in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago. And finally, WBD fielding bids from Netflix and Paramount. Future is uncertain, I have written here, but will be a massive story in 2026 and way, way down in the whole Paramount.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
WBD? What does that mean for AEW? What does it mean?
I hate to say it. It's life or death for AEW. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for finally admitting it.
Yeah, that's it. This is all about AEW. Who's really controlling this merger process or this buyout that Netflix is trying to do? Who's
David
pulling
Zasloff
the strings here?
And Ted Sarandos are going to have to come to the table and make a decision about AEW.
Yeah, this sounds like a Langus discussion that's going on somewhere hidden. All right, and that was some of the high points or low points, if you would rather, for 2025 as we come to the I skipped one. Hey, let's not forget about this. In 2025, WWE employee benefits and raises were limited, and no stock repurchase program for employees as well.
Yes, this happened, but you know what? The dividend has been doubled. Stock buyback program is being engaged with by TKO. So while employees may not be getting the rewards that they're used to, at the same time, shareholders are getting their benefits, you know, certainly in terms of the dividend, doubled.
Well, that's great news to go into the new year equipped with. Bring that up at your New Year's Eve party tonight. You can also chat about the latest at postwrestling.com, including Triller getting delisted on the NASDAQ exchange.
Yes.
Just a small issue. Triller's going to take care of this, they say. But
they're going to appeal.
They're going they're to confident. Appeal. They've just had some hiccups when it comes to filings.
Yes, their quarterly and annual report have been overdue for quite some time, and NASDAQ gave them a deadline. They did not meet that deadline. They still have not filed their financial reports. They have been delisted from the NASDAQ. What does that mean? It means that a lot of financial institutions can only buy stock that is on an exchange. If you're not on an exchange, they can't buy your stock. So it's going to be harder for Triller, for now at least, to raise money when they've already apparently been having some challenges with money. If you're not filing your financial reports, it's probably because you're having challenges getting the resources or the money to get accountants or auditors to do that for you.
Good note,
what
myself.
What does this mean for AEW+? We did reach out to Triller to ask what this would mean, what this news would mean for Triller TV. Now, remember, we should emphasize, Triller is a parent company.
Yes.
It has Triller TV is one of many businesses that are under Triller, but it is a significant streaming service for wrestling companies, including AEW.
On that note, we're going to say goodbye to everyone. Thank you for your continued support of Pollock and Thurston and WrestleNomics Post Wrestling by extension. You can go check out Brandon's extensive report on the whole TKO merger and the unsealed documents up at postwrestling.com. There will be no Rewind to Dynamite tonight. Give us a break. We are taking New Year's Eve off. However, Wei and I will be kicking off the new year with a show on Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. We'll go through New Year's Smash and whatever other news is percolating. But Brandon, thank you for a great year of shows. I look forward to entering the new year. We will be back next Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And where can people go and follow more of Brandon Thurston and your work?
You can get all the TV ratings updates and the big data reports for each and every episode of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Dynamite, and Collision. Actually, we've been missing some ratings for Collision, but for every Dynamite, for Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, those are there for subscribers. That is all there, as well as we got some monthly reports and maybe some annual reports coming up that I do at the beginning of each month. So we're about to turn the year. So we'll be getting updates on live events, on YouTube, and on who had the most matches in 2025. Look for that in about a week.
I look forward to this. I'm always curious to see how Fuminori Abe performs.
Yes.
In the top 10.
Patreon.com/WrestleNomics.
All right. Check out all of that. Again, Pollock and Thurston returns next Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And that is it for us. Have a wonderful new year. Goodbye.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.